Joining me on the line, Avi Meyer. He is the spokesperson for the Jewish Agency. They've apparently cancelled the dinner with the Prime Minister for this evening over this Western Wall, over this decision at the Kotel. Avi, all dressed up and nowhere to go.
I'm sorry, I might be having trouble hearing you.
I said, you've cancelled dinner this evening, all dressed up with nowhere to go.
Right, I guess we'll have the final alternative plan.
Right.
I'm thinking of ordering a Pizza Hut instead.
Well, at least in Israel, you get the privilege of ordering kosher Pizza Hut. Here, not so much. We don't really have that. Avi, we've been talking. We chatted in our Israel report a little bit earlier in the show about the situation at the Kotel. We're getting a cross section of responses from our listeners. Some saying, well, you know, Judaism hasn't survived 3,000 years because we make changes. Others saying, we need to love our fellow Jew, and this is the way in which we need to embrace our fellow Jews. Can you give us a bit of a perspective, please?
Well, look, the issue here is the need to transform the Kotel, the Western Wall, into a place in which every Jew can feel comfortable. The reality at the moment is such that if one is Orthodox, it's certainly possible that one might feel comfortable praying with a mechitza, with partition between men and women. But if one is not Orthodox, as the majority of American Jews in particular are not, they might feel quite alienated from that reality. And so over the years, there have been several attempts by various groups, including Women of the Wall and the Reform and Conservative movement, to advance the possibility to bring about a mixed prayer section at the Western Wall. And then 5 years ago, Prime Minister Netanyahu asked my boss, Jewish Agency Chairman Nathan Sharansky, to head an effort to bring about a compromise at that space. And ultimately, after several years of very intensive negotiations, Nathan, in coordination with the leaders of the Reform and Conservative movement, and, by the way, with the agreement of the Western Wall rabbi, did come about with a compromise that would establish a separate mixed prayer space at what is referred to as Robinson's Arch, the southern part of the Western Wall. Now, that compromise was adopted by the Israeli government a year ago, but it had not been implemented, which, of course, is a source of great frustration. What happened yesterday was that a vote was taken. I have to say, this actually came as quite a surprise, even to Mr. Sharansky, who was present in the room at the time, to suspend the plan and effectively cancel it. But at the moment, the reality is such that while there is a limited prayer space available in the southern portion of the section of the wall for mixed prayer, it is not likely at this stage to be significantly expanded. And so those who do not subscribe to Orthodox Judaism will continue to feel alienated and uncomfortable, as though they can't celebrate their form of Judaism at the holiest site for Jews around the world.
The decision is also a difficult one, that because of the amount of work that's gone into it, it's obviously been a very, very difficult compromise to have been reached. What do you think is the reason that ultimately the ultra-Orthodox in Knesset, in Parliament, were able to exert this kind of power?
Well, look, Israel's government system is such that small parties often wield disproportionate power because they have the ability to bring down governments very easily. And as it stands at the moment, Prime Minister Netanyahu's coalition does in fact include ultra-Orthodox parties, as virtually every Israeli government has since 1948. And so he is understandably wary of bringing down his government by passing measures that would not be to their liking. And that unfortunately resulted yesterday in a situation in which this compromise, which had been worked on for quite some time and which had been agreed to by virtually all parties, will at this stage of the year not be implemented.
What's fascinating to me is we've been watching, and certainly I've been watching with great interest, the amount of pressure that has been placed on the Israeli rabbinate in terms of conversions, in terms of marriage, in terms of the control over kashrut licenses. And there's been almost a building of pressure on from all fronts. The rabbinate, I think, has been fighting a war, and some of the ultra-Orthodox have been fighting a war that's been coming from everywhere. My sense is that this is almost the straw that might break the back of this, of the rabbinate, of this type of situation. What's your feeling about that?
Well, look, it's too soon to say how this might impact the status of the rabbinate or the relations between Israel and the Jewish world. But I have to say, as a representative of the premier body responsible for maintaining that connection, we're quite concerned. I think you're right in saying that this may, in fact, be the straw that broke the camel's back, because this is something that is a tremendous symbolic value to many Jews around the world who don't feel at the moment that they can feel at home in this central location for the Jewish people, and who had placed a great deal of trust and confidence in the Prime Minister for stewarding this process along, only to see it sort of fall apart yesterday. And so we are, in fact, quite concerned that our work of connecting Jews around the world in the state of Israel, which is, of course, at the very core of what we do, will be that much more difficult now, that increased sense of alienation amongst many American Jews who feel as though their form of Judaism is not respected in the state of Israel.
What's interesting to me is also that, and in fact, you've been to South Africa. I know that you were very impressed with what you saw here. The success of the South African community has been the tolerance between religious and non-religious. And something I was saying on our Israel report earlier today is that if our Orthodox rabbis had stood up 20 years ago and told people that they are not to drive to an Orthodox shul on a Friday night, well, very simply, they wouldn't have come. And I'm not sure that we would have had the level of involvement and observance that we have today. The fact is that they were able to put that aside and say, well, it's more important for people to be at shul on a Friday night than to adhere to a law that they weren't going to adhere to in any event. And what concerns me about the Kotel decision is we are really going against the notion of inclusiveness, and whether we agree with it or not, and I don't oven or pray in a mixed service in terms of my own belief system, but how else are we going to allow people to connect and maybe preserve Jewish identity through the ages? It's so problematic for me.
Look, I think you've gotten to the exact point. In many respects, I think the South African Jewish community serves as a model for many other communities in terms of its diversity, in terms of, as you said, the sense of unity amongst those who are more or less observant. And I think one of the sort of elegant points, or perhaps the central point of elegance of the compromise that was reached regarding Kotel, is that it was not going to entail significant compromises on the part of really any of the parties. The existing section of the Kotel that is divided between men and women would remain in that way. There's certainly no attempt as part of this compromise to change that situation. And the new space that was being created really is quite separate, meaning if you're not there presently, you don't know that it exists. I go there quite often, and it is very much out of sight and out of mind. And so I think, unfortunately, what has happened here is that there's been a bit of a power play where those of the Prime Minister's coalition partners realize that they couldn't wield this power, maybe. And it's most unfortunate because, as you said, what we really need is a sense of tolerance and unity, and that I'm quite afraid has taken a significant blow with these decisions made yesterday by the government.
Where do you think it's going to go to from here? Do you think there's now going to, given the amount of pressure, I guess it's a two-part question. Did they anticipate the reaction that they received during the course of today? Did government Netanyahu expect this type of reaction or anticipate it? And how do you think he's going to play this forward?
Well, the Prime Minister's office put out a statement not long ago assuring Jewish communities that the possibility of egalitarian prayer will be preserved in the portion of the Western Wall in which it currently takes place. But the issue goes far deeper than that. A central part of this compromise was the creation of a joint body between Reform, Conservative, and government representatives under the auspices of the Jewish agencies to together manage this new egalitarian state. that, it appears, will no longer be possible. And so what is essentially being said is that if you are a Reform or conservative Jew, you don't deserve a formal place at the Western Wall. And that is quite a painful thing for many American Jews in particular, but really many Jews around the world here. And so it's somewhat difficult to say how the Prime Minister will act at this point. I think we're all eagerly looking forward to seeing what it is that he can propose in order to hopefully lower the flames. But I think that the steps that we were forced to take earlier today by shifting our agenda, unfortunately canceling our dinner with the Prime Minister, are unprecedented in many ways. And we're certainly hopeful that the relevant decision makers in Israel will hear that message and will take it to heart. Tomorrow we'll be spending a large part of the morning at the Knesset in a hastily arranged session with lawmakers in order to impress upon them the import of this issue to many Jewish communities around the world. And we very much hope that they will listen and that they will act accordingly.
Absolutely. And that's unfortunately where we're going to have to leave it. That's Avi Meir. He is the international spokesperson for the Jewish Agency.